Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. This week, we are joined by Amy Volus, founder and CEO of Avenue Talent Partners, to talk about hiring during and after COVID-19. Great to have you on the show, Amy.
Thank you so much, Evan. I'm excited to be here.
So Amy, tell us a little bit about you and your background and your current company, Avenue Talent Partners.
Sure. So I am a startup sales aficionado, as I like to say, meaning sales is my first business love. I was thrown into it unexpectedly during 2001 and the dot-com bubble busting. And I started out as a tech recruiter, and I remember I survived many layoffs, and the CEO, who I adored, sat me down one day and he said, look, there's clearly nothing to recruit for. If you want to stay with the company, the only thing that you can do is to sell. And I never thought that I would ever want to do that. I had all the sort of stigma in my mind around it and was thrown into the deep end. I've always been in enterprise sales and never looked back. I fell in love, as I like to say. It was my first business love. And along the way, I've sold both products and services. I've been in sales leadership roles. I was bitten by the startup bug, and I was part of a little tiny startup at the time called Indeed, and was brought on as their first person to build out an enterprise sales function, and was there through exit. And that is, I think, why all of us get into startups, is to hopefully get to that point. They exited for over $1.5 billion, and that's always like the thing, right? So yeah, there was no turning back after that. I was like, oh, I love
that. Like, let's do this again and again and again. Yeah.
Well, and prior to that, I had worked for Yahoo. So it's like I have the big company and the small company, and they both have different pluses and minuses. But for me, the pluses far outweigh the minuses when it comes to the startup ecosystem. And for me, I always spent time in the HR tech, talent acquisition, recruiting space. And it was fascinating. So I started my first company in 2008. I don't know. Somehow I like to get into things sometimes. I'm not really sure what that's all about, but
certainly great. 2020, now's your time again. So
apparently I'm a sucker for punishment. So, you know, thinking about that, the worst time to start a business, I had my rear end handed right back to me, but I knew the entrepreneurial sort of spirit was inside of me, and I had to recover and learn those lessons. And almost 5 years ago now, I started Avenue Talent Partners, and I care deeply about helping startups get their sales hiring right the first time around. Because if you botch it up, the table stakes are already high, but those effects are incredibly painful. Not just the cost, but what it does to the buyer journey, what it does to the internal team, how it hamstrings your ability to truly scale. And so that's kind of my driving force, is to show people that you can do a really great job of being intentional and taking your time to find the right people. And for me, it's all enterprise sales as well as executive sales leadership roles. We care an awful lot about helping people do that right the first time around, and helping people with their careers, and bringing those two parties together to make magic happen, realizing that not every startup and stage is the same, and not every salesperson or sales leader is the same. So that's me. That's what I'm here to do. It's what I am passionate about every day. And I kind of feel like I was put on this planet to do this business, and I'm the Joan of Arc to show people that you don't have to do good business. So that should be my tagline. My tagline on my site is taking the cringe out of sales recruiting. Maybe it's the dirtbag thing. I don't know.
And so when you just to dig a little bit deeper here. So when you talk about the importance of, and I'm sure we'll dive into this deeper on our topic, but when you talk about the importance of getting hiring right the first time around, are you primarily speaking about the specific individuals that you're putting at seat, or are you talking more at a high level, your kind of hiring plan, making sure that you ramp up sales kind of at the right pace, you don't hire too many salespeople too quickly when you're not ready, because then you have to lay it off, and then it's, you know, you've got your culture has been kind of tinged by that. Are you referring to both? Like, how do you think about that?
I think about it in all of the above ways, as well as many more. So I think about it in the sense that I get brought in for two different reasons. I get brought in from founders that this isn't their first rodeo. They understand those table stakes. They don't want to botch it up. And they care deeply about the people that they put in place because they realize the sum of their parts, right? So that's door number one. But if I'm being honest, I spend more time in door number two. Door number two is maybe this isn't your first rodeo. Maybe it is, but for whatever the reasons are, you haven't been able to hire the right sales leader. You have completely crashed and burned when it comes to hiring enterprise sellers, and you're feeling that pain internally and externally, and it's costing you a boatload of cash. You don't want to repeat those mistakes. That's what I mean about hiring the first time around. So everything that I do comes from, so I've sold over $100 million in revenue in my own sales career. And I didn't do that because I just winged it, right? It came with a lot of intentionality and a lot of strategy and a lot of discovery and a whole lot of relationships. And all of that sweat equity really resonated with me when I thought about what's it going to take to help people get out of their own way? And part of that is through deep discovery. And part of that is taking all of the bits and pieces of countless, countless, countless conversations with people that are hiring big or small, different pockets of the market, different locations, being approached by recruiters internally and externally myself and being grossed out by that, as well as all the feedback that I've seen firsthand from companies I've been a part of scaling their sales teams, as well as my own experience in hiring and the mistakes and lessons learned and the great bits and pieces. And so I have a very specific methodology that helps to think about a lot of these things up front versus using the hiring process as an experiment and figuring out along the way, or taking bad advice and saying, oh, I'm just going to approach this as a cohort and the cream will rise to the top, or salespeople taking a backseat to their own sales career. Like, these are all things that I think about and I solve for with the way that we do our business. So to your point, it's all of those things. And I think the biggest thing that people don't realize is, depending on the stage of startup, what you need, why you need it, what your marketplace is telling you. So I'm a huge fan of the market will always speak louder than anybody else. Me, any other partner you have, anything that you might assume, your buyer holds the keys always. So I tell people I'm equal parts recruiter, therapist, consultant, lawyer, salesperson, like all of that goes into the blender. Depending on what they're going through is what we go through with them to guide them into understanding that your stage, what you need, why you need it, and then the folks that you're considering, there are big differences there, and we need to peel back those layers to understand why. That's my whole jam.
Got it. Cool. I think that's a super helpful intro, especially into just kind of your brain, how you think about this. And I really will set the stage well as we dive into how do you think about it differently kind of in this age of COVID. But before we do that, I can't forget. One thing we always like to ask is, what is one thing that no one listening to this podcast will know about you?
Oh my gosh. One thing that people listening to this podcast that nobody will know about me is I have three tattoos and they are all completely horrible that I got when I was 18 years old and I thought I was in college. And my husband, they're on different parts of my body that nobody can see, thank God. And my husband, he's like, what in the hell were you thinking? So there you go.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, we always get some good ones. Okay. Yeah, fantastic. So let's dive in here. Kind of start from the 30,000 foot view. We talked briefly about just kind of how you look at things in a normal environment. But when you're coaching founders today, as they think about hiring during and after this current pandemic, how do you approach the conversation?
So with deep empathy and a mindset to understand. So, and that's no different than any conversation, COVID or otherwise, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like to assume, and I can read the news and I can read people's blogs and I can read their social postings or tweets or whatever the case may be. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those are problems or goals or how big or small those problems are. And so as I'm approaching the conversation, it's really, and I've immersed myself into my client base and the community around me to understand what is truly happening, what is top of mind, how are you thinking about this? I know in my own business as a business owner and a founder and CEO that I feel like every single week there's something new, and it's not always bad and it's not always good. How are you thinking about those bad and good things? What trends are you seeing? What themes are you seeing? How are you trying to solve for those things? Are you solving for those things? Do you not even know how to think about those things? That's how I'm approaching the conversation today and always.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. And you bring up a good point. It's even though you may know from a lot of your research what you think is going on, to still go in with an open mind to those discussions to really get a sense of kind of what the lay of the land is, especially as things are changing week over week. So one thing that I've noticed is just from looking at our portfolio and from keeping up with the headlines. So we're seeing companies that are taking quite different approaches to hiring right now, and really depending on their situation, cash on hand, and just kind of where they're at as a company. So I'm sure you've seen this too. Some companies are doing everything they can to reduce burn to an absolute minimum. They're doing layoffs, they're doing furloughs, they're doing salary cuts across the board, hiring freezes, and probably growth stage companies getting hit particularly hard just because they're the ones that have ramped up headcount in anticipation of this projected growth. And as sales forecasts have gone way off, that whole playbook has been kind of thrown out the window. Now, on the flip side of that, we've seen other companies in a different position. Perhaps they just raised some money. Maybe they're going to market for the first time. So their burn's already pretty low. They're looking to go on more of the offense and potentially take advantage of this current environment, kind of acquiring high-quality talent, maybe even at a discount to where we were pre-COVID when unemployment was so low. So I'm curious, A, so that I'm not making assumptions, I'm curious if this kind of stacks up to what you're saying. And then B, would love to kind of dive deeper into each of those situations and how you approach them differently and kind of how you're thinking about them today.
Sure. So I'm seeing very much the same kinds of things. And I think for many companies, and like I said, this isn't my first experience when things get tricky. While there are many shades of familiarity here with what happened in 2001, 2008, it's also very different at the same time. And anybody that says that they have the playbook for this is kidding themselves. There's so much uncertainty. This is unprecedented. None of us have been through this before, and we're living through history. So it's interesting, depending on really what the current state of affairs are. There is this lovely website that I came across called burnrate.io. And I'm finding that people are making lots of assumptions about what they think their financials are, especially really early stage companies that don't have full teams yet. That's a phenomenal resource to think about using. It's good for sales leaders if they're trying to help their executive leadership team and the board understand what they're going through and what their expenditures look like. It's also phenomenal for founders. It's really a great resource for anybody that's in a leadership position trying to make heads or tails out of their financials and what their burn rate really is. So I don't have any affiliation with burnrate.io, but that's really stood out. So I think it's about, first and foremost, before you decide to hire or not hire or fire or do whatever people are doing right now, I think it's really about understanding your own backyard and your customers. And before you do anything, pouring yourself into your customer, right? Talking to them. Are you a fixed or variable expense? So maybe you have that line item in your spreadsheet, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to happen. I have a client. They got $100 million in funding. You'd think that they were super, super solid through this. They just laid off over 30% of their team because the way that they used that funding was they had a buyback program that majorly depleted those funds. They also, because these are really, really brilliant minds at the top, but they are not necessarily sales minds, and they just recently hired a sales leader, the way that they have created their contracts for heavy duty, complex enterprise deals that take a lot to implement, they have an out clause that's 30 days. What do you think is happening right now to them? Their clients are like, oh, well, where can we cut costs? Guess what they're doing? They're cutting their cost. So they are in, you would think on paper, this company is so bright, right? So many great things are happening, but they're affected. And you would think the opposite given the marketplace that they're in and the things that they're going through. So I think, you know, before we get into the hiring piece, like really, truly think about all angles and think about what's going to happen in the next three quarters ahead, not just what's happening today because you're scared. Fear-based decisions can be really, really detrimental. We're all afraid, right? Whether it's health-wise or something else, but to make a rash decision, I was amazed at the week after everybody worked from home and industries outside of hospitality, et cetera, that were really hit by this, they were already starting to furlough people. And I'm like, and I've talked about this before where it's like the market was so crazy leading up to this. Unemployment was at an all-time low. We had supply demand issues for salespeople and hiring. Salespeople were the number one role that tech companies were hiring for. All this stuff was going on. You didn't have to be that great of a company to blink your eye and get $5 million in funding, right? There are so many companies that have a lot of money that didn't necessarily use it the right way, think about it the right way, have a great disaster recovery plan, overhired because that's what you do when you SaaS. And now that's completely being obliterated. And so I do think that this is going to be a correction in terms of companies thinking about it in two ways. And I mentioned this before, Evan, where I see one school of thought of stop the presses, furloughs, layoffs, cutting costs in every single way, shape, or form. That happens from one of two different vantage points. One, you're in an industry that's really being hit and you're trying to think about how you extend your runway in run rate or runway for the long haul. Or your business was hanging by a thread. You were mismanaging it and this is going to be a correction. Same thing on the hiring side, right? It was so hard to hire people that C players were quickly becoming B plus A minus players because you couldn't hire them. And so that's going to be corrected. So this is going to be interesting to see how people come out from that. But what I will say is people are still hiring. There are companies that are using this as an opportunity to think about this is an incredible time to double down, to grow, to be really intentional about where we grow based on information that we're gleaning from our customers and lookalike modeling with the companies that are continuing to spend money with us. We want to double down on that and we need people to do that, the right people. There are other companies, and nobody's talking about this really out loud, but it's true. There are companies using this as an incredible opportunity to top grade. They know that they had a hard time hiring A players. There are phenomenal people on the market right now, and they're using that as an opportunity to get some of those people and to course correct the current team. And I hate to say that out loud, but it's absolutely a reality.
I want to dive into each of those situations a little bit more because I think it's you're bringing up some interesting points here. So for the companies that are currently on the defense, so maybe they're doing everything they can to cut costs. They're trying to, you know, reduce their burn, extend their runway. So maybe hiring may not be on the table for the immediate future. It sounds like one piece of your advice is for them to kind of take a step back, you know, and try to really be smart about their own assumptions. You mentioned burnrate.io is a great resource. What's the other side of this? Is it the way that they're handling these layoffs and furloughs is going to impact their hiring in the future? So it's important to think about that experience. Kind of what is your advice to founders in that position?
I say this a lot. When things get tough, COVID or otherwise, it's an incredible opportunity to really see how people are, how they act, what they do. I call them defining moments, right? So what I'm telling people at a variety of different levels is what you do right now, even if you have to make the heartbreakingly tough decision of eliminating your team, reducing headcount, going through all of that, it's the how, right? It's like you want to walk your talk. Look at your values. Look at the things that you touted in a great economy about what makes you special and unique. And if you're going off course, people are going to look at that and they're going to remember that and they're going to talk about that. And so because of the digital age that we're living in, the walls that we all once could hide behind are crumbling or already gone. And that sort of icky behavior, or what I mean by icky behavior is like you're handling it the wrong way, you don't care, your ego's involved, you're super scared, your vulnerability is coming out in a nasty way. You know, those things, what you do now, even if it's hard, shapes what happens in the future. And right. What's going to happen? Hiring will come back. It always does. Innovation is going to happen. This isn't all doom and gloom. And when it does come back, the very best people, even today, I had a potential client yesterday that I said no thank you to, because they were like, well, we should just be able to get people on the cheap right now, and we should just be able to hire, but we're not really sure, and we're going to use this as an experiment, and we want the best of the best, and the best of the best is going to be on the market right now. And I said, you know, that's all well and good, but you still don't know what you want, and you still are on shaky ground. I talked to you 2 weeks ago, and you reduced everyone's pay, and you were concerned that you were going to go out of business potentially. That makes it really hard for me to get the best of the best people. And they're like, well, if somebody's unemployed, they shouldn't care about that. And I was like, no, they're going to care about that now more than ever. And even if they took the leap with you, if it's not the right time, they're going to leave you when it turns right. around. In addition to that, you're the leader. It starts from the top down. How do you think the rest of your team, like if this was an essential hire, I get it, but you have a sales team in place and you have a sales leader. How do you think it's going to come across to the rest of the team when you hire a high ticket sales leader to step in and they all just took a 30% haircut? Like yeah. What do you think that says? And people just don't think through all the things. And I'm a really good sort of like blind spot pointer outer. And so those are the kinds of conversations that I'm having, is to really encourage people to think about, even if you have to make the toughest of decisions, if you're really poised to get through this thing, regardless of how gnarly it gets, what you do and how you do it and how you treat people and the way that you're communicating is going to shape this. I heard of layoffs with an old client where they had an all hands call. And they locked everyone's computer, whether you were getting laid off or not, during that call. They told everybody that that was happening. And in 2 hours, whether you could get back in or not would determine whether you were laid off or not. Like, what is that? Another incredible point for companies that are not hiring or they recently laid off, it's really important to quadruple down on their existing team. This is part of that living out loud that will be infectious. It'll spread like wildfire. And it also helps the team to level up and get better. So when you're quadrupling down on them to identify their blind spots, how you can help them be their best version, what is additional learning, how can you help them get better, invest heavily in them, you will come out stronger, because what you put in is always what you get out.
What are other blind spots that you're seeing that folks maybe aren't thinking about, but should?
So they're thinking about, I'm just going to be able to hire people. Like if we're talking about hiring, there's going to be so many people on the market. This is going to be awesome. And I'm just going to hire. And I don't, and this is maybe a bit self-serving, but it's true. It's like, I don't need help with that. And I'm talking to people about, well, wait, let's talk about what was happening before this. You were really struggling to hire the right people in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now that you have 2 to 5X the amount of applications that come your way, you already didn't have time. You already didn't know how to hire a salesperson. How are you going to do that now? Where are you going to have the time? What kind of candidate experience are you going to have? I'm also talking to people about the fact that candidate experience matters. We are living out loud, right? You've got Google, Facebook, G2 Crowd, Glassdoor, Indeed, and all the rest where people can review you and talk about you. And the way that buyers make purchasing decisions now, they do a bunch of research. We all know this, right? They've already done a bunch of research before they ever raise their hand to say, hey, I want to talk to you. One of the things that is being talked about from their vantage point in the way that the modern buyer journey is evolving is they want to find out how their investment is going to shake out post-sale. Meaning, not only am I buying the product or service, I'm also buying the team along with it. And if you have a revolving door of turnover, and icky reviews about how people feel, how they're being treated, et cetera, et cetera, what is my buying journey going to be like? You know, and so I don't think people think through, that's a big blind spot that people don't think through. It is not that hard to communicate with people proactively about what to expect in your interview process. If you were in a process before this happened, I'm sure it's changing right now. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand and communicate to those people about how it's changing, why there are delays in communication, why the role might be put on hold, why the offer was rescinded, what this all means. What you do with that now is going to shape your ability to re-engage with them, their ability to talk about you, good or bad. They could be a referral source. They could be potentially someone that hires you in the future, or they could be a potential client. People don't think about that. And so experience for customers, like what you're doing with your customers right now, as well as employees. Employees are a different version of your customer. You need them to do your business. If you treat them poorly that are working for you, or you treat the folks poorly that you're thinking about bringing into the organization, it's not good.
We're big believers in candidate experience as well. We think how you handle candidates, that whether they get an offer or not, you know, should really make sure everybody has as good of an experience as possible. Because as you said, that's going to reverberate in the broader market. They talk to people. It is a tight-knit community, and you can either turn them into a champion of sorts where they're going to help send more people your way and potentially become a customer, or you can turn them into the biggest blocker that's just going to turn people against you. So when you think about from a candidate's point of view, lots of high quality candidates, they're being furloughed, they're being laid off, things are outside of their control. As they're entering into this market, what are some tips for them as they're exploring new roles? Are there different questions that they should be asking now that maybe weren't standard questions that they would ask, you know, in say January of 2020? I'm sure since you work with so many companies to help them hire, just by nature of being in that position, I'm sure you get tons of candidates also reaching out to you for help and for advice. So curious what your tips are there.
My floodgates have opened. I have
this
day long. My Drift chat is blowing up. My in-mails are blowing up. My email box is blowing up, and rightfully so. I'm also doing a Thursday night sales Zoom happy hour with two other sales leaders to talk about sales in this new normal, hiring, jobs, careers. So a few things. First and foremost, if you find yourself on the market, the last thing that you want to do is immediately respond with a LinkedIn post talking about your feelings, thoughts, and fears. I think LinkedIn is powerful. I think a personal brand is powerful, but your network is your net worth. And if you are responding in haste or fear or emotion, you're probably not putting your best foot forward and people are paying attention. So it doesn't mean that you can't go and do that. Give yourself some days to process, to reflect, to think about what you learned and how you got better and how you can apply that to your future employer. So that's first and foremost. The other thing is, if you're reaching out to people to network, make it easy for them to help you. So I can't tell you how many Drift chats I've received where it's like, looking for job, literally, like that's what it says. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Right. And and I am super responsive. I don't ghost anybody. And I don't suggest that for anyone to do, candidate or client. And so if you're getting me right in the middle, or let's say I got a Drift chat right before we did this and I have 30 seconds before I dial in, make it easy for me so that I want to help you. Don't polarize me to treat me like an order taker, right? That's somebody that you reach out to. The other thing that I think is really important to do for both people looking for jobs, as well as founders, as well as sales leaders that are hiring, is to use a scorecard. And I just revamped my scorecard series for Sales Hacker. It got republished yesterday. The first iteration was in 2017. And I thought to myself, my oh my, does this need a facelift with all the insights that I've gleaned over the last several years, but also to be useful for people that they could actually have something that they could hold on to and use that would help them. So when you have so much stuff that's happening, you have a lot of emotion that goes into that. And I find that how the scorecard came out was from my own mistake of taking the wrong role. I don't typically cry, and I called my husband on day one and was bawling of like, what in the holy hang did I just do? And I vowed to myself at that point that I would never do that again. I'd never get myself in that situation, but how could I do that? And the scorecard really helped me reduce that margin for error. It's also part of how I work with my clients. And it's also part of what I talk about with candidates of what they need to be thinking about. We talked about the word blind spots, Evan. It's super relevant here. Oftentimes, I don't think people listen to themselves about what they like, what they don't like, when they're having good days, when they're having bad days, what they want to be doing, when they feel like they're operating on all cylinders, all of those things. How important is product versus leadership or both? All of that carries weight. And so the scorecard is an incredible way to make sure that you uncover all of the critical elements about what's important to you and the other things that are important that maybe carry less weight, and to score that, put your current gig through that, have that be a benchmark, and then think about opportunities in a way that is going to help you make great decisions versus desperate decisions. And then you start job hopping and that works against you.
I love that. I think, especially I really like your points about with so much change happening at once. And as people are getting laid off or furloughed for the first time in their career, emotions are running high, both for companies and employers as well as employees. And so to have a scorecard and to put kind of more structure and a systematic approach to either your hiring process or your job seeking process, I think is super important to help people remove themselves from that emotion and really look at it through a clear lens to say, is this a good fit? You know, is this the right opportunity? Is this the right candidate, et cetera? So yeah, I really like that. We'll make sure we include links. There's two templates, one for folks that are hiring and the other one's for candidates. So we'll make sure we include links to both of those in the blog.
Thank you. And you know, the big takeaway there is the stories that we start to tell ourselves, it's like dating, you know, like think about you go on a date. This could be for people looking for a job or people hiring. You go on a date and it's a really attractive person and you're super into them. And maybe you've had a few cocktails and you start telling yourself the story of like, I want to spend more time with this person. They're interesting. There's a lot of chemistry there. And all of a sudden you spend like 10 dates with them and you realize that this person is like $1 million in debt. They are leveraged out the hilt. They live in their friend's basement because they got kicked out. They have an alcohol problem that they can't seem to kick and it's coming out front and center, and they weigh you down more than they lift you up. And because you got super enamored and you didn't talk about some of the things that you needed to talk about that were important to you, you've now spent all this time with an individual in a relationship that isn't serving either party very well. So the scorecard, you know, like perception versus reality, the scorecard helps to cut through that.
It's that reality check. Yeah, no, that's great. So I know we're coming up close to time. One thing I definitely want to touch on though before we break is compensation. And so I feel like this is one that we can't ignore. You touched on it earlier when you mentioned, you know, some companies are coming to you saying, look, we just want to hire the best talent for because it's cheap right now, et cetera. But obviously, especially when we think about sales talent, a lot more goes into that. One, people talk. Two, you need, you know, the OTE, you need kind of the numbers to match up and make sense. So have you seen the compensation pendulum kind of start to swing as a result of all this? At least from my perspective, you know, I've heard of things like promotion timelines getting pushed and the like, but I'm curious how it's impacting the hiring conversations that you have visibility on.
So I'm seeing a variety of things. I'm seeing those things. I'm seeing companies take their existing talent and put them all on 100% commission, thinking that the cream is still going to be at the top and that they'll course correct people out. I think that there are varying degrees of thinking about this, but ultimately your top performers, right, are always going to be paid well. If you really want A-plus players, you're always going to have to pay for them. Trying to hire a three-time founder that's had wonderful exits every time and thinking you're going to get them on the cheap. The answer to that's going to be no. You know, people need to come back to reality of if you're really trying to top grade and you're really trying to get the best of the best, you're still going to have to pay for them. I do think the days of paying entry-level people six figures because they have 20 other opportunities, I do think that that's going to get corrected a bit. And it should be, right? Mm-hmm. But going through, we're just going to go to 100% commission is troubling to me, deeply troubling to me, because what does that really tell your person? How do you value them? You know, I want to feel like I'm valued in a hard time just as much as I'm valued in a good time. That doesn't mean that you can't pitch in to do your part. And so I'm seeing some really interesting, powerful ways of getting creative to go through the storm together, where everybody gets a little creative. And the minute that it rebounds, here's what we do to give you a kicker, to make it up to you. That could be equity. That could be a different, there are lots of different ways to skin that cat. Yeah. That's fascinating to me of like, hey, we're going to put some skin in the game. Here's what we've already done. Here's how I've been affected by this. If all of us do a little, it equals a lot down the line, and we won't forget that. And here's what we are going to do. And here are the signals. It's about being specific with that and not just being like, well, we're going to cut you and maybe we'll see what happens in the future. If you lean in with people, they're going to lean in with you. And if your business is suffering and you're really trying to hire, it's about having those honest conversations about where the compensation is coming from versus trying to do a fire sale and treating people poorly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are all great points, and it just emphasizes how important that communication is, so that you're not just communicating what's happening in this very moment, but also the plan of, hey, here's the light at the end of the tunnel. This is what we're going to do for you when this is all said and done. I love that. So we've covered a ton, Amy. Any final thoughts, tips, tricks, and how you want to break it down for folks to summarize?
I think it's all about the golden rule. That's going to be a great summary, right? We're all in this weird, precarious, interesting spot of going through change, even if we are thriving. There's fear about this nasty virus and family members and loved ones. And I think the longer that we are all sheltering in place and not being able to get out, sometimes the stories that we start telling ourselves aren't the real ones. And so I think it's important to think about, if it were me and the roles were reversed, how would I want to be treated? How would I want to be communicated? Whether that comes to hiring, whether that comes to funding, whether that comes to searching for a job. I really think there's a reason why that golden rule thing exists. And let's come back to the fact that we are all going through this. And the more that we can communicate proactively about the highs, the hows, the whys, the whats, the wheres, the whens, to the best of our ability, that's not going to be lost on people. And that's how we're going to get through this well, versus making decisions in a vacuum, zero communication. People are freaked out. They're making assumptions. If we went through one layoff and you're furloughing people, am I next? I'm going to start looking as a top performer. They will get snatched up. It's just, you know, thinking about those two different perspectives and my, oh my, how each one of those are different. So it's about choosing wisely.
Yeah. I think that's a really great way to sum it up. Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot today. So thanks so much, and hope you're staying safe.
Evan, thank you. Right back at you. Keep you and yours safe. And for anybody listening to this, if you have any questions or you want to talk shop, my hotline's always on.
Awesome. And we'll make sure to include links on how to get in touch with Amy as well in the blog post.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.